to everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on the professions in science right after this. You know, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated those ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been developed by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. That way, catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out, and this is called science. Well, listen to this. Did you know the sun is shrinking? That's right. The Newswire report made that surprising statement. The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching and measuring the sun for over 100 years now, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. So if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. If the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. If the sun has been burning at the rate of 5 feet an hour for the past 20 million years, then 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been constant since the origin of the sun. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Do you remember that? They told us that the dinosaurs disappeared 65 million years ago. But 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter, being consumed at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Now, you know, boys and girls, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of pseudo-scientific lies. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the guise of science. And this is one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the law school in Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and then send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the professions. There are about 45 of these professions in the modern world today. We took a look at the professions of lawyers, of medicine, of economics. Now let's take a look at the professions in science. Professions like biologists, anthropologists, paleontologists, paleoanthropologists, geologists, oceanographers, meteorologists, ichthyologists, entomologists, and the list goes on and on. Anything that there is out there to study, there's some kind of a discipline that some college someplace is teaching and turning out students who are majoring in these disciplines so that they can become the paid professionals of the future to go out and dig up dinosaur bones. That they can go out and take government money and watch the sun and measure it shrinking. Now, these are interesting observations. I was very interested in the sun shrinking at the rate of 5 feet an hour, and I'm happy to know that my tax dollars have gone to such a worthwhile enterprise, supporting worthless parasites who do nothing from day to day but gaze at the sun and measure its consumption. It doesn't do much for evolutionary philosophy, but it does a whole lot for biblical science. Because out here in the real world, we have science. Science, by definition, means knowledge. Then we have evolutionary science. Evolutionary science. It's like a virgin whore. It's an oxymoron. Evolution is not science. Evolution is a philosophy. It's a philosophy rooted in religion. It's a no-God religion. And it goes back into ancient times. It isn't even something modern. It goes back into the demented minds of the ancient Egyptians, Babylonians, and the Assyrians, who had their gods that they worshipped. Gods like Atlas, who held the world on his shoulders. Or the big turtle that was carrying the world on its back in this primordial sea that the Egyptians believed in. That's the kind of crap that went under the guise of science in ancient times, and that's the kind of crap that goes under the guise of science today. Only today we have different titles. We call them biologists and anthropologists. I call these the junk professions. These professions haven't got even any excuse for existence. At least when you and I go out and eat pig, plug up our arteries, and then go to the doctor to have him root out the plaque in our arteries, we at least had some pleasure in eating the Big Macs that plugged us up. These sciences over here don't even have any excuse for existence. They cost us money. Thousands upon thousands of students go to colleges to learn to be biologists. May I ask, please, what in the hell do these people do to create the goods and services that all of us need to live? The garbage man, at least, is doing his share by carrying away our trash. The mechanic does his share by fixing our automobiles so that we can travel. The oil driller is digging holes in the earth's crust so that we can get oil to produce gasoline to power our automobiles. You know, everybody in the trades is doing something to help somebody else maintain or expand his standard of living. Can you please tell me what an anthropologist does to put milk on your table? The answer is they don't do anything. And every one of these professions, every one of these professionals is out here. Maybe he's a college professor and he's teaching paleontology. All right? It's interesting. I'm not denying that. These are some very interesting facts that are being dug out. But do we really need tens of thousands of these people sucking off of society, consuming meat, milk, butter, and eggs, who require the services of the garbage man and the milkman and the mechanic, and to produce absolutely nothing in return? I mean, absolutely nothing. It's worse than that. They produce lies in return, which gives us a false picture. They go into these schools and universities, and then they tell us fairy tales. These are what I call the fairy tale sciences. Fairy tale sciences. Now, God told us with specificity about the science of biology in the Scripture. He said, well, now on day one I did this, and day two I did that, and day three I did something else. And he said, I made the plants and the animals, and I made these processes repeat themselves kind after kind. These guys come along and say, oh no, God lied to you. Sounds like Satan in the garden. Oh no, God lied to you. You won't die if you eat off that tree. Then they tell us, well, the world isn't 6,000 years old like God told you. He lied to you. The earth is billions of years old, and it evolved from the Big Bang. The Big Bang. I listened to that crap when I went to school. I believed it because what else was there to believe? The preachers, when I was a kid, they couldn't answer any of these scientific questions. Let's take a look at 3 or 4 of these scientific questions and see whether or not they actually make sense. Let's take a look at the Big Bang. They tell us it all started with the Big Bang. According to the evolutionary philosophers, all life ultimately originated from a super explosion. Currently, many people believe that this mega blast occurred 12 to 15 billion years ago. An infinitely tiny mass of matter somehow chanced to blow up, and things have been spinning off that explosion ever since. From then on, with random processes, everything in the universe became increasingly complex. The Sun and all of the other stars eventually condensed out of gas. The planets, including our Earth, also condensed out of dust particles swirling through space. That's what we've been told. But wait a minute. Shouldn't we ask an important question here? Have you ever observed an explosion that increased order? Do explosions create order? And if so, when did you observe this? Where were you standing? Did you photograph it? Has anybody else done such? Now, if you take a stick of dynamite and you go out and set it under a pile of lumber, this pile of lumber is very orderly. There's six rows of boards, 16 boards high. You put a stick of dynamite under it and you set it off. Do you believe that those boards are going to increase or decrease their orderliness? Now, other people will argue, well, given a steady addition of energy, it's possible for order to come about. After all, the Earth is an open system to the Sun's immense input of energy. Hang on a second. Here's another question. Does energy alone produce order? And if so, can you document the date and time that that occurred? Has anybody ever observed that in a laboratory? I mean, you may believe it, and I'm not suggesting that you ought to change your beliefs because I'm challenging you. I'm just sitting here saying, what evidence do you have? Let's try another one. How many lightning bolts does it take to bring a dead body to life? Remember Frankenstein? Have you ever seen life come from bolts of electricity? I know this is what we believe, and this is what we see in the movies, and this is what we're told in the comic books, but that's comic books and movies. Real life doesn't show us that. Now, you can believe in fairy tales if you want to. That's not my problem. That's not my point. Now, when Mount St. Helens blew up in the Northwest, we saw a good demonstration of the results of an explosion. It was a tremendously powerful blast. In fact, it was as powerful as many times the force of a nuclear bomb explosion. For miles around the mountain, everything was desolated. In fact, it was called a dead zone. Scientific articles repeatedly refer to the Big Bang as a reasonable explanation for the origin of the universe. But there are physical realities in the heavens which defy the possibility of such an explosion being responsible for the order that we see there. Now, let's take a look at three or four of them. If the Big Bang were true, the planets should all rotate in the same direction on their axis, but Venus and Uranus both rotate backwards. Backwards. All of the nearly 50 moons of the solar system should orbit their respective planets in the same direction. At least 11 of them orbit in the opposite direction. The orbits of the moons of the several planets would be expected to lie flat over the equatorial planes. However, a number of moons, including the Earth's moon, follow a highly tilted orbit. And the Sun's inner planets should be made up mostly of hydrogen and helium like the Sun, much less than the 1% of the Earth is made up of these elements of hydrogen and helium. Why is that? Now, there are a number of other mysteries to be found in the real universe that simply do not add up to a Big Bang for its origin. In the June 1983 issue of National Geographic on page 741, one astronomer is quoted concerning the remarkably puzzling precision of the universe. I mean, the universe is so precise, we set our clocks by it. To get a universe that has expanded as long as ours, without collapsing or having its matter cast away, would have required extraordinary fine-tuning. A Chicago physicist calculated the odds of achieving that kind of precise expansion. He said it would be the same as throwing an imaginary microscopic dart across the universe to the most distant quasar and hitting a bullseye 1 millimeter in diameter. Now let's think for a minute. You know the odds? Knowing the odds, then why don't more astronomers confess that presently popular theories are totally inadequate to explain these kinds of astronomical precision? Now, it just so happens that science is divided almost 50-50 over this issue of evolution versus creation. 56% of scientists believe that evolution is true. 44% of scientists believe that evolution is false. Special creation is true. God told us in Psalm 14, verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. He repeated that in Psalm 53, verse 1. He said, you got to be a fool to look at the creation and conclude that it's there accidentally. Furthermore, we have a couple of more parts to the story. It has to do with the laws of thermodynamics. You ever heard this story, the laws of thermodynamics? The first law, energy is conserved. All existing processes of nature merely change energy from one form to another. In nature, energy is neither created nor destroyed. Matter itself, which is potential atomic energy, is maintained at a constant level. Processes change matter and energy from one form to others, but the total quantity of energy in the universe always remains the same. Second law, energy dissipates. As processes in nature occur, the total energy reservoir is reduced to simpler forms with a consequent increase in what has been termed entropy. As energy is used, it becomes less available for further use. Part of the energy spent to produce something is always lost by radiation. It's lost by friction or other effects upon it. It becomes non-recoverable heat dissipating in space. Ultimately, as things are going, the entire universe will end up being filled with a stagnant mass of low-level heat energy. Not a super ball of super condensed matter that's going to explode. It's going to do just exactly the opposite. That's what we observe. To believe in evolution, you have to discard what you can observe, weigh, taste, touch, smell, see, feel, and know, and then you have to believe the exact opposite actually happened. You have to have faith that is beyond description. Faith. You have to have faith in something that you've never seen and cannot demonstrate. And what you can see and what you can demonstrate, you have to disbelieve. And so I don't believe that. That can't be true. Now, thermodynamics and scripture fit. No discovery of true science takes God by surprise, and we should expect that. In his wisdom, there would be hints of these truths found in the Bible. The first law speaks of a total creation originally completed and now sustained by God's power. The second law speaks of the curse of decay and death brought on by man's sin, crime, lawlessness, and causing an overall degeneration in everything. Now there's a thing here that we call entropy. What really does happen as time goes on is that orderly things become disordered. New things get old and break down. Living things age and then they wear out and die. This is called the second law of thermodynamics, and it is one of the most constant laws of nature. It's found everywhere in the universe. It is sometimes referred to as the law of entropy. Now, the Latin word from which evolution comes literally means an outrolling. It indicates something spiraling from the infinitesimal to all of reality. The word entropy comes from the Greek word meaning in turning. Notice the polarity of difference. Evolution means to change outward and upward. Entropy means to change inward and downward. Every energy system in the universe wears out. Stars burn out, galaxies fly apart, energy becomes less and less useful through time. Science is painfully aware of the rigidity of this natural law. The impossibility of the perpetual motion machine verifies the consistent observation that everything in our physical universe is running down. It's not a perpetual motion machine, which is what we're being told by National Geographic and evolutionary philosophers, evolutionary religionists. That's religion. It has little or nothing to do with science. It's being supported and paid for by tax dollars. Now, anthropologists, when they go out and they dig up some bones, what they're really reporting, or should be reporting to us, is we found evidence of Noah's flood. These people died and were buried. When we dig up a Tyrannosaurus rex, you're looking at dinosaurs that were killed 4,300 years ago in Noah's flood. And they're really interesting. I'm not denying that. And I think we should have some museums that have some T-Rexes and some dinosaurs and dinosaur eggs and some skeletons of bodies. But I think we should be told the truth about what we're looking at. And we can know that truth from science. And what these guys do is come in here and lie to us. Remember the story in Romans 1, verses 28 through 32? I mean, these guys lie, and they know they're lying. That's the tragedy of it. They lie and they know they're lying. In Romans 1:28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to reprobate minds to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, haters of God. Well, does that fit these biologists and anthropologists? I remember old Professor Leakey, you know, used to speak in Oakland, California. I was a member of the California Academy of Sciences. Leakey and others would come to town. They'd tell us about their finds, you know, Australia, or Australopithecus, or whatever the hell he called that thing. He found some bones over there in Africa and Ethiopia, and he came back and he said, let me tell you the story. Hell, they didn't even have the whole skeleton. They had a piece of a cranial section. You couldn't tell if that was a cranial section from a man, a monkey, a chimpanzee, or what the hell it was, and they just built a hell of a story out of it. He was about as anti-God as you could get. And at the time, I wasn't anti-God, but I wasn't anti-evolution either. I didn't know. I was just a young kid in my 20s. So I used to go and listen to all these guys talk. And as the years went on, I said, you know, these guys have less and less evidence. I mean, the Bible's got more science and more evidence in it, and it's not even a science book. Go to Job chapter 38. And there's a good one. Job chapter 38. You want to see some real science here? Well, Job made an argument with God. He said, you know, I wish I had God here, because if you'd come down here and talk with me, I would present my case before God. So God answered him. You know, Job said, I'd like to argue my case with God. Well, evidently God was listening, because the 38th chapter of Job begins with the words, then the Eternal answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Who in the hell is this fool that says he wants to argue science with me? Who in the hell is the damn fool that wants to argue science with God? Well, you'll find this story in a heck of a neat book. It's called The Harmony of Science and Scripture. It's written by a fellow by the name of Harry Rimmer back in 1936. And Harry Rimmer was a scientist himself, and he was at a science meeting one day. And in the science meeting, he was meeting with a bunch of other scientists there, and he was one of the few scientists that believed in special creation. All the rest of them, of course, believe in evolution. And so he got to chit-chatting a little with them, and as the conversation wore on, and he said, would you like to take a little test and see whether or not modern science in 1936 is smarter than the modern science of 1675 B.C.? And, of course, all the scientists said, well, my gosh, you know, we're pretty talented. We got airplanes that fly through the air. We don't have an atomic bomb yet, but we're hot on the trail. And so they took a test. Now there's 40 scientific questions. There's 82 or 3 questions in Job 38, but 40 of them are scientific questions. Remmer said, let's divide these 40 scientific questions into 400. 10 points for each question. We'll give you a test. Some of these questions are two-part questions, and we'll give you 10 points. If it's a two-part question, we'll give you 5 points for each part. They took the test. When they got all through, they could answer 3.5 questions. They got 35 points. The best of science of 1936 could answer 3.5 questions that Job could not answer. Job couldn't answer a single one of 40 questions that God put to him in 1675 B.C. In 1936 A.D., they could answer 3.5 of them. So you know when God says, well, who is this fool that darkens counsel by asking me, the Creator, about science? And so we've got the biologists and the anthropologists and the paleontologists and the Professor Leakeys and all the rest of these fools that deny God, promote evolutionary philosophy, which is in reality the land of Oz. It's a fairy tale. Nothing more, nothing less. That's why I started this story today with the sun is shrinking. Let me give you another one just for fun. You ever heard of Niagara Falls? Niagara Falls, pretty famous waterfall. Well, that famous waterfall is a magnificent example of a geologic clock that reveals a very young Earth. Young Earth. An Earth about 6,000 or 7,000 years old. Because the rim of the falls is wearing back at a known rate every year. You can go measure it. And geologists recognize that it has only taken 5,000 years or less to erode from its original precipice. Got that? 5,000 years. You can go there and measure it every day. You know, these philosophers come along with their science and they want to perpetuate themselves. And so the professor in the college, he's teaching anthropologists and biologists, and then they in turn become professors and they teach more anthropologists and more biologists. And this process goes on and on and on. And pretty soon we have so damn many of these drones in our beehive. They consume our gasoline and our meat, milk, butter, and eggs, and the services that we all need, that we all have to buy and pay for. So I'm out here working, making my contribution to society. I produce meat, milk, butter, and eggs. And then I find that the biologists and anthropologists and paleontologists are eating my meat, milk, butter, and eggs. I think we need more biologists and geologists and oceanographers and so on to get their ass out and go make their own meat, milk, butter, and eggs. I don't want to feed them. I don't want to support them. I don't want to support a bunch of damn drones. Now, I've mentioned this before, that all of these professions are non-productive. They produce nothing. Nothing. Zero. Some guy, oh, they produce knowledge. What the hell are you going to do? Eat knowledge? What are you going to do? Wear knowledge? You're going to live in knowledge, are you? Does that keep the rain off of you? Man, come on, boys and girls, let's grow up and get real. These guys produce nothing and consume much, just like all the rest of us. All of us are consumers. That's the way of life. I consume meat, milk, butter, and eggs. But I produce more meat than I consume. I produce more butter than I consume. I produce more eggs than I consume. I'm a net producer. No, I'm one of those common law blue collar producers. I'm not licensed by anybody to go out here and break the law and commit crime. And I'm not living off of or sucking off of somebody else. You people out there in radio land are not supporting George Gordon. George Gordon supports George Gordon, all of George Gordon's family, and a bunch more on top of that. You know, I pay my taxes and do all my little thingies over here to support society. My complaint is that there's coming a point in time when I'm not going to be able to support all you people. Now, some of you drones out there are going to have to go to work. Because I'm getting tired and I'm getting old. And I'm going to be unable to feed all of you drones. And so you're going to have to go out there and you're going to have to work and produce some for yourself. I mean, that's the substance of life. Hey, we're halfway through. I've got to give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. It's an easy one. George Gordon, spelled G-O-R-D-O-N, .org. That name Gordon is pretty common. I don't know how many Gordons there are, but I'll guarantee you that there's many thousands, and we're pretty famous people. General Bill Gordon, remember, of cartoon fame, and we had a General Gordon down in the Civil War of the United States, Lord Byron Gordon, George Gordon, famous poet. George Gordon Meade was a famous George Gordon in the other side of the Civil War. So the Gordons have been around for a long time. We have a big regiment called the Gordon Highlanders in Scotland. Once in a while somebody calls here and they say, well, how in the hell do you spell your name? I'm trying to spell it G-O-R-D-E-N and G-O-R-D-A-N. The only way I've ever seen the name Gordon spelled is G-O-R-D-O-N, but sometimes people get it kind of mixed up with Gordon and Gordian and G-O-R-D-I-N is spelled everywhere, every way but with an O. So in case you're wondering, it's G-O-R-D-O-N. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. 417-273-4967. Now, I have mentioned, especially in the last program, I mentioned four newsletters, and I want to emphasize that the Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective 7 days a week. Now, the sources or information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, newsletters, and so forth to our listeners. Now remember that the endorsements or recommendations that we give do not necessarily mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or that we recommend are going to reciprocate. You know, I might recommend some publication like The Privateer, and I think I mentioned the last time, I don't think that they're going to recommend or promote the Law Hour. I don't think they like us at all. But that doesn't mean that I don't like them. They put out a hell of a good newsletter, and when I recommend that, it's because I believe that it's true, accurate, and correct. I looked at the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. We put that through a pretty rigorous standard here at the law school. We're not infallible. Once in a while, somebody will write me a letter and say, "You made a mistake here, you dummy." And when we make a mistake, we go research it out and say, "Oh my God, how in the hell did we do that?" Yep, we made a mistake and we fess up. I do that. Don't have to do it too often, but once in a while, I have to fess up to, "Yep, you got me on that one. We made a mistake there." Now, most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, they're religious, they're economic, they're sectarian, they may be racial, they may be ethnic. They're some kind of a partisan whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by us here at the Law Hour. And their viewpoint, or our viewpoint here at the Law Hour, may not be endorsed by them. Sometimes we get letters in here and they'll say, "Well, did you know that those guys said that you're a dirty, no-good so-and-so, Gordon?" And I'd say, "Well, no, I didn't know that he thought that of me, but now that you tell me, thank you." No, I said the last program, I thought that Mugambo was a pretty funny guy. You know, I kind of enjoy his newsletter, and I kind of like his viewpoint, and I report on his viewpoint, and I say, "Hey, I think this guy is right and right on point." Well, I don't know if he's going to say that George Gordon's right on point. He might say, "You know, that guy Gordon's the dumbest screwball that God ever put breath into. So just bear that in mind, and that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, the staff, the network, or the radio station, or anybody whose material we review. They might think we're totally nuts. But if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to the website at georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law Hour Law School direct, 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. Talking about probably the most useless professions that God ever put breath into, if indeed God did put breath into any of them, are these professions in science. And they also violate several laws of the Scripture. So let me tell you what laws they violate. These professions in science, that is, I've got nine of them here, the biologists, the anthropologists, paleontologists, paleoanthropologists, geologists, oceanographers, meteorologists, ichthyologists, and entomologists, and there's probably 20 more of them over here, violate number 10. Number 10 is blasphemy. What's blasphemy? It's treason against God. These guys come out here and lie about God himself. They contradict the creator of the universe. I mean, these guys have got gonads that just won't quit. They got gonads about the size of grapefruit. And they come along and they say, well, God lied to you, boys and girls. The world isn't 6,000 years old. It's 6 billion years old. That's what they used to tell us when I was a kid. Now it's up to 12 to 15 billion years old. You know, the truth of the matter is they haven't got a clue as to how old the earth is. Not a clue. The only guy that knows is the guy that made it. And he told us. He gave us the information. I'm just reporting it to you. I'm a reporter. I'm just reporting the information. I wasn't there. Hell, I don't know when the world was created. And then number 24 over here, the covenant statutes, they're licensed on top of that. These guys have to go out and get licenses to dig around in the ground. And they have to get licenses over here to take government money. And these guys are licensed, bonded, insured. And then they go out here and lie to us. And it violates Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33, Exodus 34, 10 through 17, Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 and 2, Romans 1, verses 28 through 32, identifies them to a T, 2 Samuel 12, 14, and 2 Kings 19, 22. And then number 38 comes into play. This is law number 38, false witness. These guys are lying false witnesses. They're even worse than lying false witnesses. The damn fools aren't even witnesses. They didn't see jack squat. They didn't see any more than you and I have seen. And then they come back and they make these false reports. Tell us this Tyrannosaurus Rex lived 65 million years ago. What a bunch of lying sacks of crap. Some other scientist comes along and says, well, I've been studying the consumption of the sun, and it's being consumed at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Now, one of these guys is lying. Maybe the guy that's making the sun observation, who's sucking off the government trough, is lying to us. But if he's telling us the truth, then this paleontologist is lying to us. If the paleontologist is telling us the truth, that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, then this, whoever in the hell, whatever you call a guy that's out here looking at the sun, what do you call him? Is he a geologist? I guess he's an astrophysicist. Yeah, I guess you'd call him an astrophysicist. He's over here looking at the sun being consumed at 5 feet an hour, then he must be lying. Their numbers don't add up, remember? Oh, I tell my students when I come in here, why don't you do the arithmetic? Just listen to what these guys are telling you. Take notes, write it down, and then do the arithmetic, and you'll find out they're lying to you. These fools, they've been to public school. Hell, they can't add and subtract. All they can do is parrot what some professor told them. They haven't got an original thought in their head. And if they do, it's damn well concealed. I haven't been able to find it. the number 40 comes into play here. Thou shalt fear God. You know, God said, you know, you got to fear me and keep my commandments. These guys have no fear of God at all. No respect for God at all. And they've got a lot of gonads, and they come out here and they lie about God. Tell you God doesn't exist, that the earth evolved from green slime. That's the biologist. He tells you that. The geologist and the astrophysicist, he tells you that there was this big bang out here. You take a look at the laws of physics and you say, no, this big bang didn't occur. The laws of physics totally contradict it. The big bang is religious philosophy. Physics is an exact science. Physics, the exact science of physics, tells you exactly the opposite from the religion of evolution. And that's where reality's at. And then there's number 76 over here, which deals with lying. Guys, I told Mark Twain, you know, Mark Twain said there's liars, damn liars, and statistics. Liars, damn liars, and statistics. These guys are liars, and on top of that, it's worse than that. They're a bunch of damn liars. They know what the truth is. But you know, there's a protocol that goes along with this, and they can't come along here and tell you what the protocol is, because if they did that, they'd be telling you the truth. So we got to keep this fiction going. Now, somebody came to me the other day, and he said, don't you know about radiometric dating? Don't you know that we can prove these things happened because we've got carbon-14 dating? Let me take a couple of minutes here and let's take on the subject of carbon-14 dating as it relates to these lying, false, so-called scientists, the professions in science. Let's take a look at carbon-14. Discovered in 1947 by Willard F. Libby, the carbon-14 system is used to measure the percentage of unstable carbon-14 isotopes in once-living objects. The results of the test are supposed to give the number of years that have passed since the specimen died. So what are its limits? Well, the half-life of carbon-14 is 5,730 years. Thus, in five half-lives, 29,000 years, very little of the C14 isotope would remain in the specimen. An accurate conclusion would be unlikely. Half-life is time required for half the unstable element to break down into its daughter element. Generally, objects assumed to be older than 50,000 years would not make it into a C14 test lab. Now, is there any room for error? Well, this whole system of carbon-14 depends on a steady, unchanging rate of radiation through the atmosphere for at least the last 30,000 years. There are a number of unprovable assumptions used in this method. So let's illustrate it this way. Imagine appearing in a sealed room with nothing but a candle that's been burning there, and you're asked to determine how long the candle has been burning. So as you begin to assess the situation, you realize the total impossibility of meeting the challenge. You might think of figuring how long the dripping wax took to accumulate. Or you could get very technical and try to measure the relative amounts of oxygen and carbon dioxide gases in the room compared to outside. But how can you know if someone had ever opened and reshut the window? Could any past condition have caused it to burn faster? Was it ever put out and then relit? Now, there are known discrepancies in C14 dated examples. For instance, living mollusks were tested and they dated at 2,300 years old. But they were living when they took them and tested them. They dated 2,300 years old. Mortar from an English castle, less than 800 years old, tested 7,370 years old. Seal skins, which were fresh, tested at 1,300 years old. So you may wonder, well then how can any C14 dates have to be trusted, or can they be trusted, especially if you do not have another way to test for accuracy? What things could alter the decay rate of carbon-14? How about atmospheric pollution from volcanic activity and industrial burning? How about solar activity that changes like solar flares and sunspots? How about cosmic radiation from extraordinary events in our galaxy like a supernova explosion of a star? Or what about meteors or large cosmic bodies falling to Earth, which is what the evolutionists tell us happened to the dinosaurs 65 million years ago when this huge comet struck out in the Gulf of Mexico off of the Yucatan Peninsula. I mean, come on, guys. You know, an example of how meteors have affected C-14 readings occurred in Siberia on June 30th, 1908. You can read about that big comet called the Riddle of the Great Siberian Explosion in the Reader's Digest, August 1977. According to reports, the carbon-14 measurements of tree rings around the world were greatly altered as a result of that blast, giving inaccurate readings, and that's as recently as 1908. So how can we measure any sample and calculate in the effects of past environmental changes? The C-14 system depends on the idea, the belief, the philosophy that there have been no globally catastrophic events in the past 50,000 years. 1908 is one catastrophic event. Krakatoa is a second catastrophic event that occurred in the last 150 years. Come on, troops. If conditions on Earth were very different in the past, and especially before the flood, then C-14 is totally worthless, particularly for ages beyond 5,000 years. All right, now that's one. Now, is there ever any agreement between the geologic chart of ages and the actual radiometric tests on the materials found at various identified levels? The answer to that is no. None. Zero. Now, if the geologic chart has any basis in fact, and if radiometric dating methods have any absolute scientific accuracy, why won't someone undertake a study to simply produce a complete analysis of the entire sequence? Just keep in mind that this so-called geologic chart, these geologic periods, are named entirely with the theory of evolution in mind. There isn't one iota of science connected with it. Nothing. The names are totally arbitrary. They mean absolutely nothing except what believers in the theory want them to mean. Most of the names were assigned over 100 years ago, long before radiometric methods were even thought of, heard of, or known. Consider the following. Paleozoic means ancient life. Mesozoic means middle life. Cenozoic means recent life. Cambrian refers to the ancient name for Wales in Great Britain. And from the Bulletin of the Geological Society of America, Volume 69, January 1958, Kurt Teichert writes, "No coherent picture of the history of the Earth could be built on the basis of radioactive dating. Evolution demands millions of years, but if millions of years are mythical and evolution is untrue, then the whole foundation of historical geology vanishes in the tide that destroys every house built on error." I mean, that's just where erosion, or that's just where reality is located. Let's take a look at erosion. What we see around us in the real world of physical sciences, in those sciences that you can actually measure, weigh, test, evaluate, look at, and observe, like the sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. I mean, we can measure that. We can see it happening. We can go to Niagara Falls and we can measure year to year how fast that precipice is moving back. Every year, you know, chunks of it fall off. You know, all those rocks down there at the bottom of the waterfall were at one time up on the face of that cliff, and they're falling back. And you can measure that erosion. and you can measure erosion. Consider the present rate of erosion tearing down the world's land mass and filling into the oceans. Right now, today, we can measure it. We can measure the amount of sediment that's coming down the Nile River, the amount of sediment that's coming down the Amazon River. You can measure how fast it's building up over in the lake behind what do they call that, Nasser Lake, behind the Aswan Dam. Well, the indications of continental geography show that past rates of erosion were much greater than today's rate. But even so, at the present rate of erosion, there should have accumulated at least 30 times more sediment in the ocean than there is today. Of course, this is based on the assumption that the ocean has been there for at least 1 billion years. A billion years. Well, they tell us the Earth has been here for several billion years. So if we just take a look at the amount of erosion coming down the major rivers, and we can measure that, the amount of buildup in the delta of the Mississippi River is measurable. It's being measured all the time. We've got these scientists out here collecting tax dollars, these useless professions. You know, they give us information, and I guess if that's what we want to pay for, at least that's what we want to buy. My question is, well, what are you going to do when everybody in America turns into a biologist, anthropologist, paleontologist, protozoologist, geologist, oceanographer, meteorologist, ichthyologist, entomologist, and everybody in America is one of these? Who in the hell is going to carry the garbage out? Who's going to fix the cars? Who's going to put the brakes on Midas? Boys and girls, ichthyologists don't fix brakes at Midas. Boys and girls, biologists don't load garbage onto trucks. Paleontologists don't plant sunflowers. Who's going to do that real work that needs to be done to maintain our standard of living? I told you a couple of days ago that we got to do bring all the Mexicans up here from South America to do the work. And where's that going to leave us in 100 years? It's going to leave us a dead society, past tense. We'll be as dead a society as the ancient Babylonians and Assyrians. And of course, that's what happens to societies when they degenerate. The American experience has gone through its period of generation, and now it's going into degeneration. And furthermore, I think we're well along on the degeneration process. Take a look at topsoil. You know, one writer observed that the soil which sustains life lies in a thin layer of an average depth of 7 or 8 inches over the face of the land. The earth beneath is as dead and sterile as the moon. That thin film is all that stands between man and extinction. How long does it take for topsoil to accumulate? Well, scientists estimate that the combination of plant growth, bacterial decay, and erosion produces 6 inches of topsoil in 5,000 years. Well, if the earth has been going on about the same as it is today for millions of years, one wonders why there isn't a whole lot more topsoil than there really is. Maybe this is just another sign that the earth hasn't been here for very long. Now, let me tell you a little story here. Out on the plains, or out here where we actually have measurable topsoil being built up in the forest, let's say here in the Ozarks, it builds up 1 inch every 90 years. 1 inch every 90 years. Let's try this. Let's just say 1 inch every century. That's about 10 inches every millennium. So every 1,000 years, it builds up about 10 inches. Okay, now the world's been going on for how many millions and millions and millions and billions and billions and billions of years? Well, come on, guys. Let's just take 100,000. 100,000. And we're building up 1 inch. 1 inch every 1,000 years. And you got 100 of these. That's 100,000. Isn't that 1,000 inches? 1,000 inches, isn't it? Okay. So take 1,000 inches, divide that by 12, and you get 83 feet of topsoil. Can you point to any place in the world where there is, in fact, 83 feet of topsoil? And that's just 100,000 years. You know, you go back here, you know, let's go back a million years, just times 10. You should have 833 feet of topsoil in a million years. Well, let's just try a billion times 10. That's 8,333 feet of topsoil over the last 1 billion years. And don't they tell us how long the Earth has been here? Now look, boys and girls, all over the world, it averages about 6 to 8 inches. And there are some places that I've seen in Iowa and California and in river valleys where it's 6 feet deep. I've seen topsoil 6 feet thick. But on average around the world, it's about 6 inches. Like I said before, just do the arithmetic. And these fools just fall flat on their face. Flat on their face. Take a look at erosion over here again. Even more surprising is the discovery that all the continents on Earth would be worn down to sea level in 14 million years. But there's no evidence for such drastic erosion. Now, they tell us, you know, that the world has been here for a billion years. If you just took the erosion the way it's going on right now on planet Earth, the Andes Mountains and the Rocky Mountains and the Himalaya Mountains, just at the rate that they are wearing down right now today in 14 million years, 14 million years, the Earth would be as smooth as a billiard ball. So just look back 14 million years. Hasn't the Earth been eroding over the past 14 million years at the same rate that it's eroding today? That's what uniformitarianism tells us, doesn't it? What we look at in the Himalayas and the Andes Mountains are sharp, angular rocks and peaks. I mean, those mountains have been recently built. That's right, they were thrust up during Noah's flood. They were thrust up about 4,500 years ago. That's the reality of it. That's what we actually see. That's what we actually observe. That's what we actually go out and take photographs of. We're not looking at worn down mountains. We're not looking at the Earth as smooth as a billiard ball. You know, you take a look at the Niagara River and Niagara Falls, and what you're looking at here is a steady erosion. And you can look at where the erosion began, and about 5,000 years ago or less, less than 5,000 years ago, that's where it started eroding, right after Noah's flood. And that's what you're actually looking at, and that's what you can see, taste, touch, smell, measure, feel. I mean, we can actually measure it. Now, that's where reality's at. Evolutionary philosophy doesn't measure anything. They just tell us all kinds of preposterous stories. And then we go out and we get these degrees from college, and they tell us how smart we are. I mean, these guys have letters after their names. Woo! These guys are smart. Look at me. I've got this degree. I'm a master. I'm a PhD. I'm a professor. Professing myself to be wise, I have now turned into a fool. I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Keep in mind that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information, just go to the Gordon Law School and Law Hour webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, time is up. There's my signal. The producer says shut up, so I'm going to leave. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.